Let's continue our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word by opening to 2 Kings chapter number 6, verse number 8. We are looking at a time when there is a Jehoram serving as king in Judah and a Jehoram serving as king in northern Israel. These two men are brothers-in-law. The sister of Jehoram from the north is Athaliah, and she is married to Jehoram of the south. And unfortunately, the mother and father of Jehoram of the north and Athaliah, who is queen in the south, were Ahab and Jezebel. So what we have is a period when the infection of Baal and Asherah worship is moving southward into the Judean kingdom. And this is going to cause a great deal of trouble in a matter of just a few more years. But God is doing his best through the servants that he has, the sons of the prophets in the north, and the prophets also in the south, to keep this infection from overtaking everyone. So Elisha is trying to reach out to the king of the north, Jehoram, and show him that he who is the creator God of Scripture can and should be trusted by him, and that he should quit serving the Baal and the Asherah. And one of the ways that that happens is in this story that we're going to start with today. So this is a story from the northern kingdom. The exact timing of it is not altogether certain. I would place it somewhere right around the 860s, sliding into the beginning of the 850s BC. Once, when the king of Syria was warring against Israel, so the Syrian kingdom, headquartered out of Damascus, is causing trouble for the northern kingdom fairly regularly, making incursions into their territory, probably in order to capture grain and other resources during the times of harvest. Once when the king of Syria was warring against Israel, he took counsel with his servants, saying, "At such and such a place shall be my camp." So he's working out with his war council exactly where he's going to set up an ambush against the military forces of the northern kingdom. But the man of God, and that would be Elisha, sent word to the king of Israel, and that would be Jehoram, "Beware that you do not pass this place, for the Syrians are going down there." And the king of Israel sent to the place about which the man of God told him, and thus he used to warn him so that he saved himself there more than once or twice. So we would say that God, through the prophet of Elisha, is providing intelligence information to King Jehoram of the north. And this is to keep the Syrians, the Arameans, from gaining a strategic advantage over the Israelis. And so this is what I was talking about, that God is trying to reach out to King Jehoram of the north to encourage him to trust God, the real God. Verse 11. The mind of the king of Syria was greatly troubled because of this thing, and he called his servants and he said to them, "Will you not show me who of us is for the king of Israel?" So he assumes there's a mole in his inner circle, somebody that's leaking this information to the king of Israel. But verse 12, one of his servants said, "None, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom." So evidently, the Syrians have enough intelligent agents down in northern Israel that they are aware that the information is coming from Elisha. And so the king of Syria says, go see where he is, that I may send and seize him. So you try to plug the intelligence leak. You find out who it is that's providing the information to the other side, and you grab or eliminate them. So that's his plan, is to kidnap or perhaps eventually execute Elisha. Well, it was told to him, behold, he is in Dothan. Now, Dothan is a town in the hill country, about a dozen miles or so north of the capital of Samaria. And it's only a few miles south of the Jezreel Valley and the Megiddo Plain area. So in order to get there, the Syrian forces are going to have to invade the central portion of Israel. Now, they've probably been running around in the Jezreel Valley doing their raids, because most of the raids that are done in this time period tend to be grain and resource raids. You wait until the Israelis have raised their crops up to harvest time and they've got it in storage, and then you go and just take whatever you want and take it back home. So these guys are probably operating in the Jezreel Valley, the Megiddo Plain area. So they push in to the hill country just north of Samaria in Dothan area. Verse 14, so he sent their horses and chariots and a great army. They came by night and surrounded the city. When the servant of the man of God, now this is not Gehazi, because we know in a story just shortly previous to this that Gehazi was stricken with leprosy, and he would have left the service of Elisha the prophet. So this is a new unnamed servant. When this servant of the man of God rose early in the morning, probably going out and getting water and doing the morning chores for his master, behold, an army with horses and chariots was all around the city. So that's probably the big talk of the town. They wake up in the morning and they're getting ready to open the gates for normal business. And the Syrian army, or at least a large contingent of it, has surrounded the city of Dothan. That's surprising. That's unusual. And the servant is terrified by this. The servant said, alas, my master, what shall we do? Because he, no doubt, is naturally afraid that he's going to either die or be captured and made into a slave. And he wants Elisha to give guidance in this situation, which he does. And we love this passage because of what happens next. He, Elisha, said, do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Then Elisha prayed and said, oh, he who is, please open his eyes that he may see. Apparently Elisha has already been given his own glimpse into the supernatural world. So he's not worried about this human army, because he's well aware that God's angelic army is on guard duty. So he who is opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So this is the second time we've heard about the chariots of fire in the story of Elisha. The last time was when Elijah was taken away from this world, this time period, by God's sovereign act. And Elisha apparently saw these chariots then and was aware that God's heavenly army is encamped around his people. And now this young man is able to see and know why Elisha is not worried about the situation. God has it under control. And it reminds me of a New Testament principle all of us should memorize and believe. And that is that no time of testing has come on us except that which is common to all mankind. God is faithful, meaning he can be trusted in that he will not allow us to come into a time of testing more than what we are able to handle. And with that time of testing, we'll provide a way of escape that we might be able to endure it. So, in a nutshell, God never lets it get harder or hotter than what we can handle. And so, in this instance, Elisha's work is not done, and God's heavenly army is there to ensure that he is not harmed or anything untoward happens to his ministry. Now, when the Syrians came down against him, that is, it's morning now, and so they start advancing on the city in order to take it so that they can arrest Elisha. Elisha prayed to he who is and said, "Please strike this people with blindness." Very simple prayer. Doesn't make a big production out of it. He just asked God, "Please make them all blind." So, he struck them with blindness in accordance with the prayer of Elisha. And Elisha said to them, "Oh, this is not the way. This isn't the city. Follow me. I'll bring you to the man whom you seek." Now, there's more to the miracle here than just blindness. God clearly affects the attitudes of the members of the Syrian military. Because under normal circumstances, if the entire military unit were struck with blindness at the exact same time, they'd be in a panic. They would be very upset. But these guys seem to still want to accomplish their mission. They want to arrest Elisha. And so when a voice, because they can't see him, the voice of a man tells him, "Oh, this is not the city you want to be at. And the guy that you're looking for, you have to go somewhere else to find him." They go along with that. They follow this man as a guide to the blind, because God's intention is to demonstrate his power and his authority to King Jehoram, who is in his palace at the capital city of Samaria, about a dozen miles away. So Elisha led them to Samaria. And so you've got to picture this in your mind. Here come all these soldiers. Maybe all of them are on foot right now, but it's possible that they might still be in their chariots and they're letting their horses just kind of follow along behind each other. And Elisha is out in the front leading the commander of this invasion party, this arrest party. And he takes him a few hours' journey, maybe a couple hours, down to Samaria and brings him through the gates. And verse 20 says, as soon as they entered Samaria, Elisha said, "Oh, he who is, open the eyes of these men that they may see." And so he who is opened their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. So here they are, right smack in the middle of the capital city of Samaria. No doubt there are soldiers of Jehoram all over the place around them. And verse 21, as soon as the king of Israel saw them, he said to Elisha, "My father," which was a term of respect in this time period, "should I strike them down? Shall I strike them down?" So remember, they're in this semi-hot war. It's at least a border dispute with raids happening by the Syrians from Damascus against the Israelis of the north. And he wants to know, what am I supposed to do with them? Am I supposed to kill them? I mean, they're enemy soldiers. And his response is interesting. He answered, "You shall not strike them down. Would you strike down those whom you've taken captive with your sword and with your bow?" And that's a rhetorical question and helps us understand, in a way, the rules of warfare of this time period for the Israelis, which was, if enemy soldiers surrender, then you take them as prisoners of war and you treat them appropriately until you can do a prisoner exchange, until you can repatriate them in accordance with any type of arrangements for the end of the hostilities. So Elisha says, no, you don't kill prisoners of war. You set bread and water before them that they may eat and drink and then go to their master. And so he prepared for them a great feast. And when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away and they went to their master. And the Syrians did not come again on raids into the land of Israel. Now you have to understand that last line in the context, the larger context of this passage. The Syrians basically don't come back against Israel in that campaigning year. It failed, their attempt to capture the intelligence leak guy, Elisha. And so they quit in any type of military action against the Israelis for at least that year. Possibly they'll even skip another year. But eventually, they get back to their fighting or their border incursions against northern Israel, because that happens in verse 24. And the context necessitates that this happens within at least a year or two. So afterward, Ben-Hadad, and that's the name of the king, although it might be the official name of the position. Ben-Hadad is the Aramaic, I think, way of saying the son of Hadad, which was the Syrian name for Baal, the thunder and lightning god. So the Syrians considered their king to be somehow tightly associated with their chief god, Baal. So afterward, Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, mustered his entire army. The last group was just an arrest party. So he mustered his entire army, and he went up and besieged Samaria. And the way that besiegement works is you surround the city. In this case, he goes straight for the capital city. You surround the city. You cut off all opportunities for reinforcement and supply for that city so that you're forcing them to use up all their essential supplies. And if you do this really fast, I mean, if this force came down against Samaria without much warning, they could have caught the city of Samaria with very few supplies inside. And within a matter of weeks, maybe a few months, then they would have used up all of their supplies and they would have started being in need of both water and food and also secondary supplies like for light and heat. So verse 25 reports, there was a great famine in Samaria as they besieged it, until a donkey's head was sold for 80 shekels of silver. So they've eaten up all of the kosher meat items, all the sheep and goats and maybe chickens and doves and the beef. And so all they have are draft animals. And so they're starting to kill them and eat them. That's pretty desperate. And so a donkey's head, which is, that is one of the last things on an unkosher animal that you'd be eating. So a donkey's head as a food item was selling for 80 shekels of silver. Basically, 160 days wages. So a little bit more than half a year's wage. That's a very expensive bit of meat. And the fourth part of a cob of dove's dung. So a cob is, think about a quart. And the dove's dung here is being used as an alternate fuel source for lamps. There's enough energy in the manure that it can be ignited. And instead of olive oil, which is probably all used up by now, you can use these to have some light. And so just a little quart of dove's manure is costing 5 shekels of silver. So about 10 days wages. So about a week and a half of salary. That's pretty bad. Now, as the king of Israel was passing by on the wall, so he's inspecting the troops, the defensive positions, because they're keeping an eye on any sorties that are coming from the Syrian camp toward the wall. Because, you know, that's the last phase, is they'll start trying to break through the gates or break down a weak spot on the wall. So the king of Israel was passing by on the wall, and a woman cried out to him, saying, "Help my lord, O king." And he said, If he who is will not help you, how shall I help you? From the threshing floor? From the wine press?" So he's angry. He's angry that this is all happening to his kingdom. And why he brings up "he who is probably related to some of the ministry of Elisha again. That Elisha is teaching the people of northern Israel, whenever he gets the chance, that they need to depend upon "he who is," that only "he who is" can save them. So Jehoram, for that's who the king must be here, feels that "he who is being of no use, because they're caught up in this siege. And he sarcastically says, "How am I supposed to help you? Am I supposed to get you grain from the threshing floor or wine from the wine press? All that stuff's gone." But the king asks her, "What's your trouble?" She answered, "This woman said to me, 'Give your son that we may eat him today, and then we'll eat my son tomorrow.' So we boiled my son and ate him, and on the next day I said to her, 'Give your son that we may eat him,' but she's hidden her son." Now, what we've got here are two women who apparently have both given birth not too long ago. The babies born to them were probably very much underweight because they've been living under this siege for the last few months. And so they've been having a starvation ration, and that's going to affect the babies. And the babies are butchered, or maybe they died shortly after birth. And so one mom says, "Okay, let's eat your baby today, and then my baby will be on the menu tomorrow," because they're starving. Now, we can't make light of this. This is horrendous. This shows you just how dire the famine was. And it also fulfills prophecy, because the Israelis had been told way back at the time of Moses that there would come a time of cannibalism where mothers would eat their own children if the Israelis did not live by God's holiness. So when the king heard the words of the woman, he tore his clothes. Now, he was passing by on the wall, and the people looked, and behold, he had sackcloth beneath on his body. The point of that is that apparently he'd been praying and dressed in the traditional garments of prayer and fasting, which would be the sackcloth, even though he had his royal robes over on top of that. And then he said, "May God do so to me and more also, if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, remains on his shoulders today. So, Jehoram blames Elisha for all the stuff that's happening, which we know that we've seen this before, that wicked people very often blame God and God's messengers for the judgment that falls upon them, which just shows their heart. It shows that they are not truly repentant. They are just angry that they are having to suffer the consequences of their sin. Well, we're not going to get all the way through the rest of the story, but let's go ahead and see how far we can get. Verse 32, Elisha was sitting in his house. So he has a residence inside the capital city, and so he's present during this famine. The elders of the city, perhaps even the elders of the country, were sitting with him. Now, the king had dispatched a man from his presence, but before the messenger arrived, Elisha said to the elders, "Do you see how this murderer has sent to take off my head? Look, when the messenger comes, shut the door and hold the door fast against him. Is not the sound of his master's feet behind him?" So Elisha is aware that there is an arrest order out for him from the king of Israel. So he tells as witness to the elders that he's with, when this messenger shows up, don't let him in. Now, while he was still speaking with him, the messenger came down to him and said, "This trouble is from he who is. Why should I wait for he who is any longer?" And so apparently there's some sort of communication that's been going on, that the king has been told, if you will just trust God, he will get you through this. But Jehoram, in his sin, doesn't want really to wait.